Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We are in the midst of going through the Bill of Rights. And so what does that mean? Well, what that means is we are kind of covering, I'll just say, the topics and the issues of the Constitution that have been lost over the past 200 years, and how we have to start aligning those rights, those, we'll call them the immunities and privileges, because that's how they define it in Article 4 of the Constitution, as well as the 14th Amendment, the individual privileges and immunities that are guaranteed by the Constitution. And so for us to move forward, we kind of have to get through the obligatories first. And I only have so much time before the end of the year. And oh, by the way, I'm going to be actually punching this out at the beginning of each segment, if I can remember to do so. And that is, on the 1st of January, we will be disclosing why the 2022 election, the year of 2022, is so important in the fact that we have the opportunity to actually kick out this unconstitutional presidency and actually drive the Constitution by actually getting rid of the occupant. What I don't want to do, because I've talked about this before, and I don't want to talk about it in the details, because what we're trying to do is we're trying to convince people that, you know, you can continue to watch this news cycle. You can continue to get self-absorbed into this pornographic news cycle. But what's more important is learning about the Constitution and those aha things. Oh, wow, we can actually get rid of Biden? We actually have a constitutional process that can get rid of Biden? Absolutely. So, anyhow, as of the 1st of January, we will get into that, and we're going to get into a lot of things along with the ratification debates after the beginning of the year. So you're going to want to actually, if you're looking for some meaty topics, meaty subjects to get into, that you say, you know what, I love the show, but you know, I just want to have something that I can throw out to my friends or other like-minded people so that they can start getting involved and so they can start actually supporting or listening and helping other people start coming to the tables. Because bottom line, until we have enough people with enough power, and you don't get power without intelligence, right? So here's some fundamental premises. Reasonable people equally informed seldom disagree. Right? Because once we're all equally informed, we all go, oh, yeah, well, we know that. That's the empirical data. That's the empirical case. And so what we want to do is we want to get you equally informed. And then the other adage is this concept of, oh, yeah, well, with all of these, let's just say with all of the pieces of information that you're going to get, the old adage is knowledge is power, right? Well, okay, so now that you know something, it becomes powerful, but it doesn't become powerful unless you what? Act upon it. And so knowledge becomes power once upon acted upon. So by giving you the potential of becoming powerful, you then have the ability to actually start getting out in people's faces. You have the opportunity to get out and help people come to the level of information and knowledge to make them powerful with you. Once we get, because again, everybody's going to agree. Everybody's going to agree with the fact that we have this opportunity to do this. And so as we start moving forward in 2022, educating people so that people clearly understand what the Constitution really means, how those lines were defined, this is not rocket science. Go read the ratification debates yourself. Do it before I do, And then when we do it, you can do it together, and we'll kind of walk through each of the debates and or, you know, the parts of the debates that are part that are important, because some of the states, to be clear, some of the states just, you know, rubber stamped the Constitution. There was not a lot of heat and vigor. As a matter of fact, there's only a few states that had a vigorous debate regarding the Constitution, and those states that actually debated it were the states that actually had a high presence of anti-federalists. And the anti-federalists were doing everything they could to kill the Constitution. They wanted to maintain the Articles of Confederation. They wanted to maintain these cabals. And so they actually had to settle the debate whether the Constitutional Convention exceeded its scope or not. And the matter of fact is that the states actually settled that debate, that they didn't. Because the states that actually were adamant, Virginia being one of them, the anti-federalists were adamant they were not going to debate the Constitution until they settled the question whether that commission actually exceeded, or I should say the delegates exceeded their commission. And they went right through it. They said absolutely they did not, because by a vote, and the majority ruled. So in other words, the majority of the people disagreed. Now, it doesn't mean that the disagreement just goes away. But when it came down to, do you believe the people had to make the decision, did they really have a runaway convention? No, they didn't. So how can you tell me today that the people back in those days who already settled this argument were wrong and that it was still a runaway convention? How can you even articulate that kind of argument? I mean, really? And there are people that are doing that. Instead of actually building upon the Constitution and actually using the Constitution as a weapon, they try to use that it's a sad argument against the Convention of States. We're a representative government. The Convention of States has no place in a conversation at this point. They're trying to make it relevant. They're trying to get a lot of people out there. This is why understanding what we call the Bill of Rights for 2022, when technically it's just aligning the Constitution to what we call the 21st century, aligning the Constitution so that we get our property rights back, so that we get our privacy back, and those types of things. So anyway, as we kind of move forward, because what we want to do is we want to kind of pick up where we left off, and we were covering all elections must be local. And so before we do that, let me get through these obligatories. So let me cover this really, really quick. As you know, the show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and you're listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions. Oh, yeah. So we didn't get much done this weekend. Yours truly has been just pulled in so many different directions, and I've got lots of phone calls that I've made and that I'm making, and that as of Wednesday this week, things will be settled down, things will be a little bit better. So I will get the financial or the Fortitude Financial Coaching information up so that you can actually reach out and get a hold of Gary Smith for your New Year's, or at least initiate with him on New Year's if you're serious about getting attuned financially and getting yourself out of this, I'll just say it, the destructive mode of, well, what we call going out and spending money hand to fist instead of actually getting on top of it. As David Ramsey says, living like no one else. In other words, instead of having all of the luxuries and comforts of life, get on top and live within your means so that you're not using credit and so that you're starting to save money. Become your own bank. And in so doing, you become the most powerful financial person that you know. And then eventually, you will actually be able to live like no one else. Anyway, free Constitution classes at constitutioneducation.us. Timber Nation, got to get some pictures of the desk where we've actually moved. And so that is the desk you hear there. And so that's 2 inches of solid walnut. Yep. Anywho, we We would recommend you go to timbernation.com if you're looking for some quality furnishings. And more importantly, if you are looking to also get the things that you want that would actually suit your furnishings and your furnishing needs and requirements, we're actually going to go back to Timber Nation and we're going to get some bookshelves done. So that's probably going to be something that's also going to get up on their wall within the next year. Anywho, because it's going to be on our wall. Anywho, what we highly recommend is reach out to Chris and company and let them know what you need. If they don't have, they got a lot of stuff on display there. If they don't have it on display, then by all means, get your custom order in and you will be glad that you did. Radio Dust Covers, radiodustcovers.com. If you are looking to actually get some covers to protect your gear, there you go. And our comment line, 425-270-5416. So with that, let's actually just dive forward. We were talking about election, making elections local, right? All elections must be local. So what I'm going to do is kind of recap this, and then we're going to go into some other things. But this is all a part of a Republican form of government. You have to understand that we have a right to have our representation. We do not have a right to actually be able to drive what we'll call a democracy form of government where we the people get to vote on everything. It is critical that we understand that our representatives are to represent us and that they are supposed to actually operate within the framework of the Constitution. In other words, they can't assume any new powers. They have to come to us and say, you know, we don't have this power to do this. If you want us to have a health care plan, then you got to give us the power.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so where were we? We were just covering all elections must be local and that we're supposed to have a representative government. You don't have a right. We do not have this, I'll just call it, this blanket authority that we can vote for anything and everything we want. They want to give us taxes, we can say no. Look, We in concept to a Republican form of government, we have created a constitution, and that constitution is what's supposed to hold them within these realms of governing us. They don't have the authority to give us health care unless we delegate that power to them. Okay, so having a Republican form of government is what we have to get back to. So the only way we can start doing that is actually we have to start doing it at the local level. So every election must be local in accordance with Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution to comply with the Republican form of government. Elections must be protected from outside influence of the election area. An area of election, AOE, is based on the physical area of the land that the election encompasses within the state, a city, county, district, or state. Property owners should be allowed to vote on any measure. This is, I'm just throwing this in here too. Property owners, if you own property and it's rental property or what have you, and a measure is going to affect your property and affect your ability to make money. So we've been beginning to see the Agenda 2030 actually starting to affect rental properties where, you know, they're passing these laws and they're getting people in and bottom line into the city councils and into the county commissions and so forth. And what they're doing is they're actually going and creating a hostile environment towards not the renters, but to the homeowners or the property owners who are renting that property. And they're making it really hard for them to raise the rent and so forth. This is how they go after you. And this is how they strip you of your actual, fundamentally, they're stripping you of your property, but they're stripping you away from being able to make any money. And next thing you know, you start losing money. And pretty soon they come in and they foreclose or you have to do something. You either have to sell at a loss or you just try to get out as fairly as you possibly can to protect yourself. This should not be happening. You should be able to elect, or I should say actually have an opportunity to vote in those areas where you actually have property, things that are going to affect your property taxes, utility taxes, and etc. No person or entity can contribute or promote any candidate that is not a resident within the area of election. I don't care how popular it is. Trump should not be endorsing candidates. We actually need to stop listening to who, you know, people, because how nefarious is that? Even if Trump is the best guy in the world, even if I'm the best guy in the world, you have to figure it out for yourselves who is your best representative, period. And so the only way to really start getting on top of making all elections local is for yourselves to actually start vetting candidates. And we have a vetting process. We'll get into that. But what you have to do is you have to understand that you cannot allow anybody to come in outside influences into an area of election should be forbidden and should be illegal. Any person, it's just like China trying to affect or Russia trying to affect our elections. It is an outside influence. It is as immoral as you can get. And we actually have to look at that as a political warfare tactic. When people are actually waging political warfare, we have to be aware that obviously these are our enemies because they're trying to take away the government that we're supposed to have. Soros is our enemy, folks. When you start looking at who our enemies are, we've got enemies within us because there are people that want and are working with Soros and those types of people. So this is how we do this. Business contributions to campaigns can only go into the area of the election where they operate. In other words, if Walmart is not in that area, they cannot actually contribute, nor can they contribute anything that's been funneled into Walmart. In other words, they must prove that these contributions are strictly from the local profits on that particular operation. So if you have a dirt poor area that has no big businesses, then nobody from outside can come in and buy up your elections because they can flaunt, you know, that affluence. I'm sorry. Your money means nothing in our elections anymore. This is how we drive our elections down to an actual competitive race of anybody within the area being able to, you know, actually win and being able to actually compete so that the issues can truly be, can come to market is what we want to call it. Because who's the, what is the market? The electors. The issues are the issues of the day, and getting the people so that they can decide what they really believe is the most important issues and what they want to see with their representation out there fighting for them at the state level, at the county level, or what have you. When I say the state level, I don't mean that the area of the election is at the state level. It could be your district, and it could be a dirt poor district. This is why when we start looking at a lot of the elections in these other states, it's very easy to walk in with millions of dollars and buy these elections, just because the average election historically in Wyoming for state legislatures is less than $10,000 per candidate. Less than. We're probably looking at more like $3,000 on the average. The ones that have the $10,000 or $15,000, that's where you find that those people are hardcore leftists that are being bought and sold by Soros and company so that these people can continually drink from the fountain of power in driving progressive rules and regulations through the state house. The intent is to get money and even personal endorsements outside of an area of election, out of all elections. This way we can actually have full control over our elections. So this is how we make all elections local. But keep in mind, once we go down this path, something I don't have here that we need to add to this is that your representatives, once they're elected, can only be, they can only conduct business with you. Anybody that is from the area of election, no lobbyist can walk up and say, hey, we want you to have a favorable decision on this particular bill. And so this is, you know, something that we will incentivize so that you can vote for the way we want you to vote. No, we've got to take all of that crap away. Those lobbyists, if they're not within the area of election, and how do you prove this? Well, the brick and mortar of the lobbyist organization cannot exist outside the area of election. In other words, if let's say it is a Second Amendment rights, or let's actually look at the progressive side, and let's say it's a lobbyist, a Greenpeace lobbyist organization, and the majority of the money that goes into actually paying for, you know, the people to do the work, the people that are doing the lobbyist, they have to prove that they're being supported from people within the area. If it is not the people within the area that are paying for that lobbyist organization, we have to have full transparency, folks. And when you can actually see where the money is coming from, and when you can actually see that it is outside the area of the election or the area of responsibility, whatever you want to call that legislative district that's your representative, they cannot be entertained by any lobbyist whatsoever. The only way a lobbyist can actually walk in and have a conversation with your representative is, let's say there is a let's say there is a an issue that they're on a committee of, and this lobbyist is actually working for the company that you're investigating, and let's say there's some problems and you need information, then they should be able to at least give you that information, but that's all they can do. Any other type of influence other than, you know, dealing with the issue at hand that they have a realm, or there is a direct tie to a committee where this organization, let's say it's a defense contractor, and the defense contractor is doing some things that, you know, is not within the scope of the contract, or doing something in addition, and or let's say it's a farming company. Let's look at a really small local type of thing. And I want to put this into perspective for you. Let's say it is a farming supply company. And that farming supply company is actually providing, you know, some resources for the local farmers. And those resources are, let's say, not necessarily what they're supposed to be, to help, you know, fertilize, protect the crops or what have you. And this organization is actually tied to globalist farming companies where they're actually, basically, they're conducting like an economic warfare. And you have to investigate this and come to find out that the crap that they've been selling and giving to the farmers in your local area have been depleting and or impacting the crops so that they're not as productive. Well, wow, that's not a good thing at all. And so they have a responsibility to be able to give you the information that you're seeking, but they do not have the ability, they cannot have the ability to be able to come in and actually say, hey, you know, we want you to look the other way. We're going to contribute to your campaign. They cannot contribute. They cannot do anything like that. So if they're not a part of your area of election and all the funding from your area of election, then they are not to deal with you unless it's absolutely necessary business. We'll be right back after these two promos.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so let's now go into the Bill of Rights, because what we want to do is we want to actually start realigning, because we're going to go through these issues and we're going to actually prove that we've skewed so far away from the Constitution and how we're supposed to actually be protecting our rights. This concept of the petition for grievances and for the redress of grievances, the petition of government for the redress of grievances. I'm trying to go too fast, so let me slow down a little bit. Bottom line is that there is no such thing within the Constitution that protects your right of protest. Non-peaceable assembly in the streets, sidewalks, or areas, even areas that are designated for assembly, or any area of commerce, and the protests and these types of protests must be outlawed when they're actually blocking commerce, when they're actually blocking access into businesses and so forth. Remember the, what was it on the Wall Street? I forget. I think it was back in Obama's days. There were these protests that were, you know, shutting down businesses down in the Wall Street area and so forth. And everybody was complaining. And the politicians and judges were happy to allow this to happen because they would much rather have you and your business shut down than them having to address these issues politically per the Constitution. Let's keep in mind, the Whiskey Rebellion was the first protest, and those who participated in it were tried for treason, and two were convicted of treason. Petitioning is a constitutional right and the only process for people to engage in government at any level, and government cannot constrain the people one bit from this right. Protesting and blocking access to commerce, religious worship, speech, assembly in areas designed for peaceable assembly, such as parks, but not streets or sidewalks, because streets and sidewalks is designated for commerce, the flow of commerce. You don't have a right to block streets or sidewalks. Personal or property damage in any form cannot be tolerated and must be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. As a matter of fact, we have this thing called hate crime, right? And what is hate crime? It's just an aggravated addition to, like, you killing somebody, and, oh, but because that person was of a different race, well, maybe that's a hate crime. Well, when it comes to a capital offense, do we really have to put a hate on top of that? I mean, even though, and I'm busting at the seams here, even though it's obvious that you had to hate somebody to kill them, right? I mean, you either, if this was murder, we're not talking about stand your ground. We're talking about an absolute, first degree murder, premeditated murder. Come on, really? That you want to create this hate? But I will tell you, there is something that we actually have to start adding, because we need to identify the political or the ideological, let's just say, baggage that comes with, some of these types of protests. These are people who do not have any respect for our government and the processes within our government. They want to revolt and they want their changes now. And if they don't get it, then, woe be unto you. And so we have to actually start going after these people. And we actually have to add that this, I believe a person that starts acting and supporting Bolshevik Revolution type of stuff should lose their ability to vote, period. They should not be able to vote because they don't even care about the political process. They would rather wage, a political war out in the streets and cause fear. They're terrorizing America. And they are political terrorists. There you go. So we need to create a political terrorist law that says if you're a political terrorist and you want to get out and you want to actually try to influence people by committing these types of crimes, then you lose your right to vote, and you will not be able to be free in public or behave like that in public, I should say. And we have to start constraining. As a matter of fact, we really need to start, and I'm going to bring this up on January 2nd. We need to revisit the Tory Acts. We need to actually go after these people and kick them out. Now, the next topic is the militia and its configuration in counties and deployment within the county. The militia, by the constitutional designs, is the enforcement of all constitutional laws. We're not to have any standing armies. In other words, the federal government cannot enforce its own laws. The people are the final checks on unconstitutional government. So what we have to do is we have to restore the militia, and the only way to do that is by you creating an organized militia. We kind of have gone through this, and so what we want to do is get you more active, working with the Constitution Party and those other parties, Wyoming Party with the Republic Review Committee. Start working with these parties and committees so that we can actually start getting active and involved. One of the things we also need to actually look at, and so that everybody understands, that the federal government only has the ability to compel you into very specific things. And so the one thing that they can actually compel you to do is to house soldiers and equipment and armament during wartime when we're fighting a war here on the soil of the United States. That's the only time the federal government has any ability to compel you to actually use your property, use your land. One of the other things, and I'm really going to gloss over this, but we have to restore the right of common law courts and common law grand juries, period. That is a constitutional right under the 7th article or under the 7th amendment to the Constitution. The right of the people to be secure in their purses, houses, and papers, right? So this is the 4th amendment? Yeah, because the 3rd amendment is the compulsion amendment. So the right to be secure in your persons, your house, papers, and effects in the digital age. Where is this? And how is it that all of a sudden all corporations have a right to your privacy and can share it? States need to start creating laws to demand that let's just say intellectual property is what it is, that you have, you know, this factor on, you know, on investments, and you become a guru in helping people understand, you know, what it takes, and they have to be a subscription and they can't disclose anything. But everything that you're doing is actually research that you do online. Well, the companies that actually are tracking you, they could actually, if somebody could actually, you know, come in and hack you and find out what resources you use online, and then just divulge that to everybody and wipe away your ability to make money, right? Because that is your intellectual property in how you're able to do your investments and so forth. Let's just say Warren Buffett had these secrets, and because with today corporations actually tracking anything and everything you do with your digital footprint and being able to actually disclose all of this stuff, how is the fact that you're doing these things, you have a right, again, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects in the digital age. So any company that is tracking you, that should be illegal. They should not be able to track you. They should be able to actually just provide you the services and not track you. The only way they should be able to track you is if the government comes along with a warrant and you are to be told about that warrant, because I truly believe that if criminals were told that, hey, you know, we're going to be monitoring you, we're not going to tell you how we're monitoring you, but we at least have to tell you that we're monitoring you, then criminals would actually, you know, have to shut down. And if I don't want to make it hard to catching criminals, but I don't want government to be able to figure out ways to actually start prosecuting good patriots or destroying patriots by what, you know, what, let's again, going back to a good patriotic person that has figured out a way to actually invest and make money off of the markets as such as they are. Well, all of a sudden they expose that. They take away your ability to make money. They don't have that right. And as a matter of fact, you have a constitutional right of having those things protected. All tech companies must disclose all forms and types of data and information they are obtaining from you, retaining, sharing, or selling in any way. And you should have the right to be able to opt out of it. They must provide an opting out for all citizens of the state, as well as removal of process, complete blocking of code, operating on whether the system and shares, whether this is an operating system or what have you, and anything that is sharing or communicating your data without your knowledge. This has got to get shut down. No person shall be held to answer a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or indictment of a grand jury. And political prisoners like those incarcerated of January 6th for supposedly this protest, they should have a right they should have the due process that's deserved them. They should have a right to be able to be out on bail. Are you kidding me? And as a matter of fact, let's talk about bail. When we come back, I'm going to talk about bail and the problems that we have with our penal system. We'll be right back after these two promos. I don't want to bleed into it like I did on the first one. So we'll be right back after these two promos.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so I'm actually jumping up one, but I think it's worth mentioning because it kind of ties to these political prisoners. Now, when we look at what the heck's going on with those protesters and how they've been detained and how they have lost their rights of counsel, a speedy trial, and all of this, and how basically they are being ramrodded through a process. How is what is happening to them legal? It doesn't matter at this point in time. It doesn't matter what type of confessions or anything that's gone on. We are living in an age where political prisoners exist in the United States when that shouldn't happen. As far as people who are actually trying to follow the law. Those people who are actually flaunting and violating the Constitution are getting away with murder, like the Clintons. So we actually have to have this conversation. And it's actually, if you look at the Bill of Rights, I believe it's the Eighth Amendment that says excessive bail shall not be required or excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. So what's an excessive bail? And I just want to, I've talked about this before, but we actually have to actually create a system where things are equal for everybody. If you really believe a DUI is a heinous thing and that we have to have a level of pain for anybody that commits that, then why is the level of pain $50,000? Because anybody that makes $40,000 a year is going through a lot of pain compared to a person that makes $40 million a year or $1 billion a year. Do you see my point? What we have to do is we actually have to actually make these bails, fines, and punishments, they have to be, as far as I'm concerned, we need to start making them so that they are representative of the individual's life style, income, what have you, their resources. So in other words, when we have a carpenter who's 22 years old and, you know, he's just learning, he's just barely making ends meet, he's got two kids and a wife, yeah, he shouldn't have done the stupid deed of going and getting drunk and getting behind the wheel. However, his pain, if we want to make it 1 year's salary and he's only making $50,000 a year, then that's what the bail should be, is $50,000 for him. And then for the pro football player who makes $14 million a year, and on top of that, with endorsements, bringing in some tune of $25 million a year for everything that they're doing, then they would pay a $25 million bail. Does that make sense? Because now we actually are holding them both equally accountable in the eyes of the law. So we have to acknowledge that nobody is equal. We have to acknowledge that everybody has different, you know, stations in life, and that if they're going to commit a crime, they should feel a specific level of pain. And that pain has to be attributed to your lifestyle or the quality of life, your income, those types of things that you're making. We have to revamp our bail system, because right now it favors the affluent and rich. And why? Because bottom line, if you're making $50,000 a year and that's what your bail is, nobody has that kind of money sitting in the bank that they can just actually write a check to walk away and be able to, because just to be clear, when you pay that $50,000 bail and you show up at court, you get your money back. A rock star or somebody that has it, and you actually have to take their savings, their assets, their holdings into account as well. So that when it's time to discuss bail, you don't walk out until we have the full picture, you know, your taxes or what have you, of all of your holdings. Because let's say this person is actually just living off of their savings, like Warren Buffett. And so, or their investments in their savings. In other words, it's not necessarily, you know, they're not making money on a regular basis. They could go a year or two without actually bringing any money in, because they have a good savings. So you have to actually look at what their savings, their investments, all of these types of things. So you can say, oh, okay, so we see that you could easily cash out your stocks to pay all of this. You have access to this level of resources. So that's what your bail will be. In other words, make it so that they actually have to withdraw everything, and make it so that they actually pay that full amount so that they have nothing left. This way, we're actually creating an even playing field. Or they will go down the path of paying a bail bondsman, because a bail bondsman, if you understand the average person, the average citizen, when they've committed a crime, they've made a mistake, and we're not talking about murder or anything else. We're talking about a DUI. So when the average person has a $50,000 or $100,000 DUI bail, they have to go see a bail bondsman. And then they have to pay $10,000 to a bail bondsman. They have to take out a loan to pay a bail bondsman. And what happens to that money? The bail bondsman goes and writes that $100,000 check. He gets all that money back. And he gets to keep your $10,000. Are you kidding me? This is why there's a huge difference between the affluents. And if you look at the legal system and how we've all been sucked into, you know, paying for this, for their elite lifestyle, that's got to change, folks. That has to change. It doesn't matter who you are. If you're an officer of the court, it doesn't matter what your affluence is. Everybody has to start feeling the equal level of pain, because if not, then we have excessive fines imposed or cruel and unusual punishments inflicted, because what is being done for one person does not mean it is going to be cruel and unusual punishment for another. This is why we have to actually start looking at making things actually right. I know we've done this for years, and that's because our legal system has been perverted for years. This is why it's so important to get on top of this. Now, I already talked about this because the Seventh Amendment guarantees us the right to common law and common law cases. You have a right to a trial by jury over any common law case over and above $20. $20, that's what's in the Constitution. So last time you had to pay a $20 fine for a traffic violation, were you given a right to a trial by jury? No, you weren't. And as a matter of fact, they've made it so that traffic court is considered a misdemeanor. Well, that is, if you're looking at that kind of money, then as far as I'm concerned, because why is it that we have these traffic laws? Well, it's supposedly for safety. Well, if it's supposed to be for safety, then it shouldn't engage with, as far as I'm concerned, it shouldn't be engaging a court at all. Why is a court there? Because a court makes money. That judge makes money. And so that's how they figure out how to actually stimulate the cost so that your county commissioners, your city, they don't have to pay for that. That court becomes a revenue generation for both themselves as well as government. We got to get out of that. There should be zero revenues for the court. Courts should be deemed as a necessary evil instead of a money-making evil. And so what if they really want, and we need to move all of these traffic violations into administrative fees. In other words, we have to actually start putting the power back to the police officer to say, look, we don't make any money on, you know, pulling you over for running a stoplight or for not coming to a complete stop at a stop sign, especially when I'm sitting here and I'm watching you and you roll through, but you've looked in every direction to make sure that you did a safe crossing of the intersection. If you're living the spirit of the law, and as a matter of fact, this is where we have to change the laws themselves to say, hey, if you actually did safely look both ways and you came across, or better yet, it's like a four-way stop in the middle of the night, you know, out in an agricultural area where it's plains and fields and no trees, and you can see that there's nobody coming, then why even have to slow down? Oh, because in the middle of the night, a kid's going to be crossing the road? Well, I'm going to tell you, any kid that steps out when they see a car coming to think that they're going to stop for them, sorry. We need to start teaching us and teaching kids that they don't have a right to actually just cross, that they have to make sure that it's safe. Now, if you want to have a crosswalk out there, then you can put one of those buttons that creates this flashing that says, hey, there's somebody actually crossing, so that will be communicated in the middle of the night where you don't have to pay for, you know, all the street lights, because government has to be reasonable, and it's unreasonable for us to expect, you know, that we have Cadillac services when we don't need that. There's a spirit behind the law. And the law is for public safety. We have to change our paradigms so that government is serving us instead of we serving government. And that's the whole intent here. And when we start looking at, you know, whether we need to have a citation, did you live within the spirit of the law? You know, and this is how we can actually beat these types of tickets. And I'll get into it because I don't have enough time. We'll cover this in our next episode. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.